That and something else going for. What was it? Oh, I can't remember. Anyway. Hey, but somebody did ask me. Somebody said, they'll rename me. So said, hey, when are we going to start talking about boys and dating? All right? Because I know that's why you're here. It's coming in about 2 weeks, okay? So we'll mention boys tonight, though. All right, here's the caveats for tonight. There's a counselor named Dan Allender who's written a lot of books. I highly recommend them. A lot is stolen from him. A lot is stolen from my friend Matt Howell. And when I was talking at staff meeting a couple days ago with all our staff about what I was going to speak on tonight, I feel ill-equipped every night, I promise, because there's a sense that always when I'm teaching, I'm not living out completely myself. But if we're going to talk about emotions, as I started studying for this, I am an emotional kindergarten. Okay, you just need to know that. And so the things that I'm telling you, I'm trying to understand. I am a pastor. I'm not a counselor. So I'm happy to talk to some of these things, but man, the deep dive, I got names of good counselors in town. So just know that. All right, here's what I was thinking about. Back in 2014, you can look this up. UVA, University of Virginia, they did this study involving mostly college students who volunteered themselves. Here was the premise that for anywhere between 6 and 15 minutes, you had to go into this room that was pretty much empty, and you had to sit. And you just had to sit with your thoughts and your feelings and nothing else. And before you went in, there's actually this anklet kind of thing that they put on that you had to willingly test, and you'd hit the button and it would shock you, okay? And they said on the scale of 1 to 10, it was a 5, that it was painful enough that you would have to pay them to do that again, all right? However, here's what they discovered, that in the midst of sitting in a room by yourself with your thoughts and your feelings, 2 out of 3 of every guy started shocking themselves. 1 out of every 4 women shocked themselves. One guy shocked himself 191 times. Okay? Think about that. Because when forced to sit alone with yourself, many people would rather shock themselves and feel pain than have to deal with what I really feel. And look, as we talk about relationships, and this is our last week on relationship with self, we just have to talk about emotions. Because it's a part of how God made us. And we just don't know what to do with them. But there is a whole book of the Bible, the largest book of the Bible, it's the Psalms. And it's a hymn book, it's a prayer book, and it runs through the gamut of emotions. Of what it looks like to walk in this broken world with God and to trust Him. And so that's what we're going to look at. Here's the premise, okay? We are not to give up on our emotions and deny them, nor are we to treat them as they're the end-all, be-all, our identity. We're actually supposed to give them to God. We're supposed to pray them. All right? So let me pray. Father, anytime we start talking about emotions, I get scared because it reveals just a lot of my immaturity. Usually it reveals a lot of scary stuff for us. But would you be gentle and kind with us tonight? Would you expose things about our heart that need to be seen? But then would you be the good shepherd, the good father that you are, and allow us to come to you as we are and experience that you really are with us. In your son's name, I pray. Amen. All right, Brian read Psalm 42. That's what we're going to be pulling from. And Psalm 42 and Psalm 43, if you actually have your Bible open, originally they were one psalm, so I'll mention a few things from there. But here's the deal. How are we supposed to relate to our emotions? Listen, understand, and pray. We're supposed to listen to our emotions, we're supposed to understand our emotions, and we're supposed to pray. And we're going in 30 minutes. Okay, I do not mean to be simplistic. There's no way we're going to say everything about this. I'm trying to give you general principles, okay? So, listen to your emotions. Okay, if you look at Psalm 42 again, if you just kind of scan it, the psalmist is separated from his home, from Jerusalem. He enemies are surrounding him. The Lord actually feels distant. And what he does is he cries out to the Lord. But look at the language. He is listening to his feelings. He's naming it and he's sharing it, right? Verse 1, he talks about joy, actually the absence of it. That he feels like a deer that's thirsting for water, that his soul pants for God, but it's not there. He's naming the emptiness. Verse 3, my tears have been my food day and night. Think about that picture. That he is crying so much, what he is eating is his own tears. Verse 5, my soul is cast down. It's in turmoil. It's a word of fear. Verse 9 and 10, he shares his anger that he's being oppressed by enemies, that they're mocking him. He's experiencing injustice. And I think you start to feel it. And it's actually a little, if you really read the Psalms, it's unnerving. Because this guy somehow is able to name and share deeply and honestly how he feels and what's going on. Sadness, fear, anger, joy. And it's just coursing through him. And he can name it with God. And I just want you to think about that. Because, like, think about some of God's promises if you're familiar with the Bible. He says that he is near the brokenhearted. And he says he comforts those that mourn. God does not say that he comforts the buoyant in spirit that say it's always good all the time. He just doesn't say that. And if we only present a packaged version of ourselves to others and to God, we will just miss out on that. Because his promises are for where you actually are. He promises to be with you in your fear, not apart from it. I'm going to pull, probably the best thing I could tell you is just go watch Inside Out, all right, after this is over. But like, this is the premise of Inside Out, right? Riley, who's away from home and she misses her friends and she wishes she hadn't moved and all this kind of stuff. Joy, right, the character in her head, keeps trying to distract her. Like, go do fun stuff, go eat pizza, right? And the message by the end is that if we try to numb everything, we actually miss out on real life. That sadness is key. And I guess that's my first question is, do you ever feel that? Do you ever stop long enough to actually reflect and listen to your feelings and can actually name them? Because whatever a good and healthy relationship with emotions is going to look like, it has to involve at least being able to sit with them and accurately name them and share them, right? But most of us, if you're like me, it's just too scary. And so what we do, instead of feeling our feelings, instead of listening to them, we do one of two things. We numb our emotion, or we do our emotion. We numb our feelings, or we do them. Look, because our emotions expose our hearts, because they expose what life is like, and we don't want to feel that, because a lot of times it exposes the tragedy of the world and the darkness of our hearts. Instead of feeling that, I just want to numb it. Right, because so often my feelings, what they are exposing is that life is not really safe, good, and predictable. That your feelings they expose that that's an illusion. That's a lie. Life is not safe, good, and predictable. That's not this world. But that's so scary to us, and we so don't want to fear that. And I don't want to feel sadness or grief or whatever, a loss that I can't go back on. I just say, man, all right. Hello, my friend Netflix, right? Because instead of feeling this, I would rather binge watch Stranger Things. That's awesome. Because I don't want tears to be my food, you know, day and night. Or, what can you numb your emotions with at Ole Miss? Like 10,000 things. Alcohol, weed, cocaine, eating. I mean, man, Bluebell ice cream. That is my favorite numbing mechanism in the world. Staying really busy so I'm exhausted every day. You can numb it with sex. You can numb it with fantasy sports and social media. All those things I just named, they're great. Maybe not cocaine. Everything, like normally, I really mean this. Like normally they're good things. But when we use them to numb something, they actually dehumanize us because they're keeping us from reality. They're keeping you from becoming aware of what's really going on with you. And so the first advice, is I would actually ask you to resist numbing. Like, what if you didn't go to pornography and you sat in the feeling that's there and you refused to numb it? Do you know what I bet you're going to find? Sadness. And emptiness from a lack of connection. And that's really hard. But God can meet you in that. What would it look like to actually refuse to numb some of these things so you actually begin to feel them and can name them? Because at the end of the day, feelings are just feelings. Sadness, fear, they're scary, but those feelings won't kill you. They just expose what's going on. And so we either numb it or we do our feelings. John Cox, who's a clinical psychologist in Jackson, he's awesome. He does some of our staff training. This is what he talks about, that instead of listening to our emotions like the psalmist is doing, we do them. We let our feelings rule us, and we thoughtlessly inflict it on other people. So here's how it looks sometimes in college. Let's, I told you we talk about boys, right? Boys and girls. So you've been at a date party with your girlfriend, and she spent some time hanging out with her friends, laughing with her friends. She innocently talks to some other guys and enjoys that. And what wells up inside of you is fear and anger, all your insecurities. And so here's what doing your feelings looks like. On the way home, you're silent. She's like, "What's wrong?" You're like, "Nothing." Right? And you start kind of throwing a pity party, and she's, "Oh, just tell me what's wrong." And then it's like, "Bleh," right? And you just lump all of your fears and how, whatever. When you talk to other guys, it makes me feel like you don't really like me, blah, blah, blah. That's doing your feelings. Just because you feel it doesn't mean you have to lump it on somebody else. Feeling them would be sitting in them, thinking about why you feel that way, and maybe going to talk to a trusted friend. And maybe, yeah, maybe you do go back and have a conversation that's needed, but maybe you realize, like, I'm being ridiculous. And so that's when you start realizing, like, that's not feeling it, I'm doing it. And so some of the holes that are in your walls at your house or in the dorm room is because you're not listening, you're doing it. Some of the oversharing on blogs or social media that you do, I'm telling you, you're doing your emotions rather than actually listening. And this is what happens. If you try to bury your emotions, we're emotional people, they're eventually going to come out. They'll just come out roaring out in unhealthy ways. And so my bet is that most of us don't listen to or feel our emotions like the psalmist because it seems so unstable and scary. Because it breaks the illusion that life in this world is a safe, predictable place. And it's not. So, first, we actually are called to listen to our emotions. But then second of all, we got to understand them. This is fascinating. If you look at verse 5 and verse 11, he does it again in chapter 23. The psalmist actually speaks to himself. Did you see this? He says, "Why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you in turmoil?" Who is he talking to? He's talking to himself. He's questioning himself. Right? The modern day of kind of relating to your feelings is don't question or understand them. It's just whatever you feel is right, so just kind of do it. Let that be your reality and just push it out on everybody else. Right? So whatever. I'm an Enneagram 7, so blah, everybody's got to have fun, right? I don't care how you feel. Like, no, instead of that, you actually begin to question. You say, okay, what's behind that? What's underneath my sorrow? Why am I fearing? Why is it there? And so we're supposed to think about emotions in the same way I would suggest that, like, warning lights on your car's dashboard. Think about that. The function of the warning lights on your dashboard, they are great for giving information about what's going on under the hood. I tell you, you need to inflate your tire. You need to put oil in your car. And if you ignore those, eventually your car is going to break down. They're great tools of information. They make you seek to understand what's going on with your car. But they are a terrible tool of guiding you. Like, if you stare at your dashboard lights and drive, you will wreck the car. And your feelings are great indicators of what's going on in your heart. They are a terrible guide for what's true in life. When Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars says, "Trust your feelings," it's a lie. Okay? Because your feelings can be fickle and they can lie to you, and they're just not the greatest gauge in the world. Think about it. I mean, like, sexual immorality feels great. Okay? Anybody that tells you otherwise is probably lying. And so sex with your girlfriend, there will be a feeling of pleasure, of excitement, of connection, of this is great, I feel close to her, and it's a lie. It's not a great guide of what's good and true and healthy. But when you understand that the emotions are feelings, they're gifts from God that are pointers to understand what's going on in your heart, that's awesome. So why are you cast down, my soul? Why are you scared and fearful? What's going on underneath the hood? And then you begin to realize that, oh, emotions indicate what I really care about, what I'm really concerned about. That's why Dan Allender says that emotions are not a problem to be solved. They are a cry to be heard. Think about that. Because they reveal your heart. They reveal your struggle. Actually, I would even say with the heart of God. They reveal what you deeply care about. So it would do you well to pay attention to them, to understand them. So think through, again, just the emotions of inside out. And like, we're going to do a skip over them for 5 minutes. We're not going to do them justice. This is going to be every single occasion. But think about how these emotions reveal what you care about. Fear. Fear is just the response to an uncertainty about a danger, and you don't have the resources to handle it. Fear always exposes the instability to preserve what you deeply cherish. And so we run. Right? And that's a good thing. If a bear is attacking you, okay, that's when you do your feelings. All right? If a bear is attacking you, you do your feelings and you run. But right now, my son, who's 6-year-old, about every other week, he comes sprinting into our room at 3 a.m. Why? Because of fear. And I've asked him, I said, Clark, what are you afraid of? Nightmares. Because he can't control them. He doesn't have the resources to, so he runs. What is underneath your fear? What do you care so deeply about that when you feel your inability to preserve this, fear comes out? Why do some of you run from close, intimate relationships? Because you fear intimacy. You fear actually being deeply known and knowing somebody else, and you realize, I don't have the resources to do this and to keep somebody from hurting me. Okay. If you meant that, we can work with that. Now I'm seeing what I actually care about. And there's things in this world that are evil and scary. It's true. You don't have to deny that. Anger. Anger is the flip side of fear. It's the emotion that comes when something that we care about is threatened or assaulted. But instead of running, we swell up in power and try to destroy it. You try to destroy whatever is threatening the thing that you care about. You try to get rid of it. And usually the intensity of the anger is accord with the degree of the perceived injustice. Things like sex trafficking and abuse, all that should provoke anger. That stuff is tearing apart God's world and is tearing apart people. It really is. And anger is an emotion that reveals that we should care about those things. And one of my favorite scenes in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, I'm trying not to work during this for anybody. Okay, they've been out forever. Goblet of Fire is the fourth book. This is towards the end where they discover that one of the professors has actually not the real professor, but one of Voldemort's followers has been using Polyjuice potion and has been embodying this professor the whole time. And he is dead bent on destroying Harry, on bringing Voldemort back alive, and he ends up killing, actually, a student in the process. And when Dumbledore finds out, and when he comes in and he blasts him away through the door, here's what it says. I love this. The description of Dumbledore is, Harry fully understood for the first time why people said Dumbledore was the only wizard Voldemort had ever feared. The look upon Dumbledore's face as he stared down at the unconscious body was more terrible than Harry could have imagined. There was no benign smile on Dumbledore's face, no twinkle in the eyes behind the spectacles. There was a cold fury in every line of the ancient face, a sense of power radiated from Dumbledore as though he were giving off burning heat. Anger. Because something was trying to destroy what he loved, which is Harry. And so we just have to question, why are you so angry, Brian? What are you protecting? And a lot of times we just realize it's not good stuff. What are you really fighting for? Y'all probably heard me say this before. When I was a freshman in college, there was a guy who was really good looking, who was really athletic, who was really involved with RUF. He was a great guy. Girls liked him. And I hated him. I really did. Because he was a threat to everything that I wanted to be. Now, I never told him that. Instead, the anger got expressed in like overly competitive games of basketball and, you know, subtle marks and things like that. But why was I angry? Because he was getting in the way of what I thought I needed. And that's what you've got to ask. Like, man, what is provoking the anger? Why do you hate the guy that's dating your ex-girlfriend? And is that even right? When you're around her, why does it bring out the anger? What is being threatened? Because it might just be, I'm mad about stuff that isn't really injustice. It's just about me. Then sadness. Sadness, look, is the emotion when something you care about is lost. And you can't do anything about it. Regret is kind of a slight disappointment, but the sadness is that emotion of loss. And it's vulnerable. Because you're admitting that you are powerless, you're powerless to fix it. But here's the deal, it's healing. It's actually a gift. Jesus gives us sadness for walking in this broken and disappointing world. Again, go back to Inside Out. At the end, what happens is joy gives sadness all of Riley's memories and she begins to touch them. And she experiences healing through it. Because in that big scene, you know, everybody's telling her to be happy, be happy, be happy. Don't let your dad see you're sad. And she finally loses it and says, I know you want me to be happy. But I miss home. And I miss Minnesota. And I miss my old friends. And you need me to be happy, but I just want to go home. Please don't be mad. And she starts weeping. And that actually is where the healing begins. Because when you get sadness, this is quoting John Cox, you can actually begin to grow. Because grief is a transitional emotion. It's like a gift that God gives you when people went outside the Garden of Eden and said, here, you're going to need this. This is what it looks like to live in a broken and fallen world. And so you got to ask, like, why am I sad? Your parents didn't quit fighting and they got divorced. Yes, that's what you need to see. It's a loss. It is, and you can't get it back. Some of you are seniors and you realize like you can't get time back and you're going to be leaving your friends. Okay, there's a true sense of loss there. Like death. Jesus walks up to the tomb of Lazarus and he weeps because it's a loss. Be sad about it. Name it. And then joy is just the emotion from actually having what I value, possessing it. What brings you joy? What brings you joy will actually reveal what you really care about and what you long for. Look, I don't know what to do with this, but on Sunday, there's an elation at midday, all right? That I'm telling you, I'm still trying to figure this out. There's an elation at midday that you ladies have that you will never express again. Like, you won't even express it when you graduate. You won't even express it at your wedding. You think I'm kidding? You want, like, it is something that no, like, I've never seen it. And what does that tell you that you deeply care about? It's that you just want to be in. You want to be in the inner ring. And it makes you feel good. You want acceptance. And see, when you listen and you understand instead of numbing or instead of doing, you start to understand, this is who I am. This is what I deeply care about. I'm not saying that. The degree that we care about it always, right? But it's where your heart is. And now you can begin to, now Jesus can meet you in that. Which means the last thing that we do is that we actually pray. What you're not about to hear me say is like, so if you just begin to pray, it all gets better or, you know, something like that. But you really do pray. Because the Psalms are teaching us how to be formed before God over a lifetime. Dan Allender says, we are not machines that are repaired through steps. We're relational beings that are transformed through relationships with others and God. That's it. And so bring your emotions to God in prayer and discover that actually your struggle ultimately really is with Him. You can be specific. Like, again, these verses are like, my soul thirsts for the living God. Verse 11, he's saying, I need to hope in God, my soul. But just look at the whole Psalms. What they're doing is amidst sadness and fear and grief and anger, They are coming to the Lord of the universe with their whole self. And they're saying, I don't understand what's going on, but I'm at the end of the day going to try to entrust myself to the Lord. And just think about that. Whatever's going on, he's at least talking to God about it. And see, here's what you'll discover when you do that. That though we think that our emotions are mainly horizontal, like I'm ticked at you because you gossiped about me, when you begin to bring that anger and that sadness to God, here's what you start realizing. There's always a vertical component. Always. Because I start realizing I'm limited, I'm weak, I'm powerless, I can't change the past, I can't make time stop, I can't even control what other people think of me. And it's scary, but it's true. And then you start realizing your real issue is with God. I'm doing my emotions and I'm raging against my roommate because I don't think God is just. I know that he does have the power. He does have the resources and he's not making the evil stop. That's ultimately the root of it. Or I'm frenetic about never missing out on a party or trying to enjoy every minute of senior year because I really don't think the Lord offers real eternal joy. I don't think the Lord offers real joy. So I have to maximize it right now every second of the day because I don't really believe that he is joy. Or I'm sad and I'm grieving hard and sadness is a place of extreme vulnerability because I'm saying I cannot get back the loss of my grandmother. Or I cannot get back the loss of my friend or the job. And I'm coming to God and it's very intimate because I'm struggling with, I cannot do anything about this and I know that God could have. I know that he could have. And you let this be taken. And there's a mysterious, I don't know, intimacy because you're dealing with the real God, with yourself. But here's what begins to happen. As you bring your emotions to God, you discover God's heart. Look, and this is where Allender, I know I keep quoting, I'm sorry, just read proud of this all, okay? But as long as we look as emotions as just problems to be solved, and prayers are a way to fix them, all that you're going to do is subordinate God to being to be a just kind of a fix-it man to fix my emotions. But that's not who God is. He's a person to be praised and adored and trusted. That's the point. And so if you know the story in Luke where Jesus heals 10 lepers, he sends them all to the temple. They have this horrible skin disease. They go to the temple, and by the time that they get there, they're all clean. And only one of them comes back to Jesus and thanks him. And he asks where the other 9 are. I want you to think about this. If you ran into all those lepers that had been healed by Jesus one day, let's say you ran into it later that night, 9 of them, if you looked at them and you said, "Hey, do you know Jesus?" They would say, "Jesus is incredible. He healed me of my leprosy." There'd be one guy that if you say, "Hey, do you know Jesus?" He'd say, "I'm so glad I had leprosy. It meant that I met Jesus." You see, it's just different. The point is coming to know God and his heart. When you come to God with your emotions, the agenda is not to get the emotional mess resolved, but the emotional mess is the very gift that God has given you so that you'll know him, so that you'll worship him. Because as you pray and you go through anger and fear and tears and joy and you look at God as he is supremely revealed, which is Jesus at the cross, you will actually see the heart of God on full display. Because when you bring your anger of the evil that's been done to you, bring it to Jesus. And the gossip that tore you down, when you look at the cross, you will see there's the anger of God on full display. I see that Jesus took upon himself all of my evil, all of my sin, all of my lying, and he let the wrath of God the Father destroy Jesus in my place. And so it humbles me. It makes me see that God is more angry about the injustice that I am. He just is. And I can trust him that one day he's going to make all things right, either by the cross or by the day of judgment. And I don't have to do my feelings. You can bring fear of failure and fear of loneliness and fear of being known deeply, whatever it is, and look at the cross and you can see that Jesus really did fear something. He did. He was overwhelmed with fear at losing his father's presence, at not knowing his father's face. It's why the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's the one thing we can't live without. And when I look at Jesus and see that he took the one thing that I should ultimately fear losing, he's a strong God who made himself weak for me, and he took the one thing I should fear. Okay. Doesn't answer all my questions. But I begin to know the heart of God in there. When you bring your sadness to Jesus, and when you look at the brokenness of this world and you cry, when you, through those tears, see the cross, what you see is that on the saddest and darkest day in world history, the Son of God died, and he brought about a resurrection that's going to heal the world. He plunged himself into death and sorrow so that one day all tears will be rolled back and all pain will be rolled back and there'll be no more sorrow and everything will be made new. That doesn't fix everything. But you start understanding the heart of God, and it's actually a place to trust. That is why John Cox says sadness, you ready? Gratitude and sadness are the holiest emotions that we have. Do you know why? Because both of those things, you've relinquished control and you've sat in the presence of God. And you realize, I just have to trust him. Gratitude and sadness, the holiest of emotions. And I'll just end with this. When you bring your emotions to God, here's what you'll finally see, that he is with you. The number one command in the Bible is do not fear. And you know what his promise is? Number one promise, I'm with you. His name is Emmanuel. We serve and worship a God of joy because he is a God who is with us in our suffering. He's with us in our anger. And he gets angry about death and evil too because he loves it. He loves this world. And so, look, at least now once a month, this is what I'll end with. My wife can attest to this. I will wake up at like 3 in the morning. And I'll wake up to this like mat of hair in my face. And I'll be like, oh, what is that? And then I'll realize it's Clark, my 6-year-old. And what happened is sometime during the night, he slipped into our room and he climbed up into our bed and he crawled between me and Liza and he just fell into this deep sleep. And why did he do that? Because he was afraid. But you know what? He didn't wake us up. Because he didn't need an explanation of the monsters under your bed aren't real or whatever. What he needed to know was that his dad was with him. And if that was true, he could rest. And he could go back to sleep. And look, what is being held out for you is that when you come to God with your emotions, he is with you. I promise. He knows what it's like to be you. And he'll carry you. Go to the arms of Jesus. It's scary. It's confusing. It won't answer every question that you have. And Netflix and alcohol and sex, they're easier. But if you want to live a deeper, fuller, richer life with the triune God, bring your emotions to Jesus, the man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. And he will be with you. And then you begin to rest, not in like, have I figured everything out about myself? But I can rest in the one who does know everything about me. And he's with me. That's an invitation. Let's pray.